This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Probably most of you here that are attending are intending to go for Hajj this year. And it's very important that you are attending a class such as this, because a lot of people are unaware of the ins and outs of Hajj and the actual way of performing Hajj. It's not just going to the Kaaba and performing the Salat and your Hajj is done. There are different arkan, there are different things that you're supposed to do, different locations, different days, different dates. All of these things have to be kept in mind and learned before a person goes. In addition to that, a person will see so many things being done in front of him that are not according to the Sunnah. So not everyone attends a class before they go. And because of the ignorance of the people who have not had the opportunity to learn the class and learn how to perform the Hajj, they will be engaging in ignorant acts, and a person will be put into doubt as to whether I'm supposed to be doing the same thing or not. For example, it's very common that when people are passing by Maqam Ibrahim, that they will take rub the outside frame of Maqam Ibrahim and touch it with their hands, which has nothing to do with the tawaf, and it has nothing to do with tabarruk, because the actual frame that is on Maqam Ibrahim is not there from the original. It's not an original piece that a person can get tabarruk from. So it's just an exterior frame, but people tend to touch it and go close to it and kiss it and so many things that you will see, which has nothing to do with the Sunnah. In fact, it could be even classified as bid'ah. So it's important to learn how to perform all of the rituals and to make sure that a person stays away from the innovations and the wrong things, and to make sure that a person is doing everything according to the Sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. So first and foremost, you have to keep your intention clean. Okay, like everything, what we're supposed to do is do our actions solely to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is not so that people can say that such and such a haji has performed Hajj so many times, and he or she, in the case of a female, she has performed the Hajj, and now a person feels that he is now, people are obligated to call him haji, and he demands that respect from people. This is not the intention that a person should have. A person should be intending to go solely for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to fulfill the obligation that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put upon him. And I'm not going to go into all the virtues and everything. Today is just a practical aspect of the Hajj itself. Inshallah, when you are actually going for the Hajj, I'm sure you'll read up on all of the virtues of the different aspects, the different planes, the different maqamat, and all the different places that you go to. You'll read about the virtues, inshallah, as you go along. So inshallah, we will go through the slideshow and we'll go through the practical aspects of Hajj, inshallah. So today we're going to be learning how to perform the Umrah, and this is the first part of the Hajj. And you'll find there are three types of Hajj. Go ahead, Brother Mohsin. Next slide. Go ahead. There are three types of Hajj. One is called tamattu', and this is the Hajj that we are going to be talking about. What does tamattu' mean? Tamattu' means, literally translated, it means to derive benefit. Okay? What is the benefit that a person is deriving when he's performing Hajj? Hajj tamattu'. After performing the Umrah, he comes out of the state of Ihram, and however many days are between him and between the Umrah and the Hajj, he is going to be free from the state of Ihram. So he's going to be relaxing. So this is why it's called tamattu. Now there will be instances where a person may be forced into doing one of the other types of Hajj, particularly ifrad. Ifrad means only performing Hajj without performing Umrah. Okay, so in the case of tamattu and in the case of qiran, Umrah is performed with the Hajj. In the case of tamattu, a break is taken between the Umrah and the Hajj, and a person comes out of the state of Ihram. In Qiran, a person actually remains in ihram from Umrah all the way until the Hajj is completed. And as you can imagine, it's very difficult to keep up with the restrictions of ihram for so many days. So this is something that I would not advise people to do. Many people, when they get there, they are very, very eager, and they start with the intention of making Qiran, and then halfway through, they come and ask a question, you know, Shaykh, I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable, and I want to get out of ihram, what do I do, and so on. So best not to burden oneself with the difficult Hajj and just go with tamattu. When are the situations when a person may be forced to perform ifrad? For example, a woman, she on the way to perform the Hajj, her menstrual cycle starts. And now she cannot do any of the arkan of Umrah, and this menstruation continues all the way until 8th of Dhul Hijjah. Until the 8th of Dhul Hijjah, or even the 9th of Dhul Hijjah, she's in that state, and now there's no time for her to perform the Umrah before the Hajj. So now she will be forced to just make the intention of Hajj and not the intention of tamattu or even Qiran. So this is a situation where a person may be forced to perform Hajj Ifrat. Or for example, a person, he's coming for Hajj and somehow maybe he's going by road, or you know, he's going by plane, but the plane, it gets grounded for technicalities, technical issues, and it continues 3, 4, 5 days. A person is stuck, and when by the time he gets to Mecca, it is too late for him to perform Umrah, and he has to make the intention of Hajj straight away. So then, in that case, he's making what is known as Hajj Ifrad. But for the most part, most of you will be engaging in Hajj Tamattu. Okay, go ahead. Carry on. Okay, now there are a few practical things that you should keep in mind. First of all, make sure you make copies of your passport, ticket, inoculation, certificate, etc. Keep one copy at home, one with you in your suitcase. Okay, now this wasn't such a big issue before, making photocopies of your passport and your visa. Why? Because you didn't really need it. Okay, what happens is in Hajj, as soon as you get to the airport, there'll be young boys wearing thobes without any kind of identification or whatever. They'll be grabbing your passport from you and just taking it away, basically walking away with it. Some people who are not aware what's happening, they think, you know, what happened? This guy ran away with my passport, and they start panicking. But the reality is that during Hajj, they will take your passport away from you, all right? And you will get it right at the very end. How they do it? It's a mystery. Okay, millions of people come, and alhamdulillah, for the most part, they get their passport back without any problem. But just in case, you just keep a photocopy. And now there is more of a practical reason to make a photocopy, is because if you are going to get a SIM card for your phone, they will not give you the SIM card without a copy of your visa and your passport. Alright, so if you need a SIM card for the phone, you're not going to get it without this. Even if you want to recharge the SIM card, they will want to see a copy of your visa and a copy of your passport. So make sure you have the photocopy. Obviously, if it's at the Mutawif's office, the passport office, then you're not going to be able to get it, and you're going to be without a SIM card throughout the trip. Okay, so that's one reason why you need to have the photocopy with you. Also, the concept of e-tickets is a little bit new to the Saudi immigration. And especially on the way back, as when you're coming from Hajj terminal, most of you, if you're not going on Saudi Airlines, you'll be coming from the Hajj terminal out of Jeddah. And the guards that are guarding the area and letting you in, they will demand to see a ticket. Okay? And however much you object to them, then no, my ticket is an e-ticket and I don't have a physical copy of it, they will say, no ticket, you're not allowed in. So unless you can kind of plead with them and kind of persuade them or pull out a copy on your phone or something like that, So it's best to have a copy of the e-ticket with you, a paper ticket, so that you can show them. Before leaving, clip the nails, remove the hair under the armpits, private parts, and trim the moustache, and then perform ghusl, as you may not get a chance to do so on your journey or on the plane. And this is specifically for the people that are going to Jeddah first. If you're going to Medina first, it's not, you know, that essential. Obviously, for cleanliness purposes, you should, but you're not going to be in the state of ihram when you're going towards Medina. So if you're going towards Jeddah, that's your first stop, then all of these things, try to do them before leaving home. Okay, next. All of the things you should do before going for Hajj: meeting the family, asking forgiveness, paying off outstanding debts, and so on. If the issue of ihram, when do you actually get into the state of ihram? Or when do you put the sheets on? Depends on your journey and how you're going. Okay, so say for example, you have a direct flight into Jeddah using Saudi Airlines. Okay, so the Saudi planes actually have a little bit of a musalla in the back, which fits about 10 to 15 people at a time. And it has curtains there. So you can go to the back and in that musalla, change into ihram on the Saudi plane itself. However, you know, for the purpose of ease, you know, you should maybe keep the lower garment changed. And when it comes time for you to get into the state of ihram, and that's with the intention, then you can quickly take off your top and put the upper garment, upper portion of the ihram on, and then before you land, just make the intention. Again, this is if you're going to Jeddah. So if you're going through Emirates, Etihad, Qatar, and so on, you'll basically stop in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Doha, whatever the station is, before you actually get into Jeddah. So over there, you can actually change. In Dubai, I know that they have even showers in the public areas. They're probably going to be crowded because it's Hajj time, but if you can, if you have time between the two flights, you can actually perform a shower there. In Dubai airport also, there's internally, there's a hotel. If you have a few hours between the flights, I think the rule is that if you have more than 8 hours between flights, the airline provides a hotel for you, and you can go to the hotel and take a shower and so on, and wear the sheets, and then get onto the plane wearing the sheets. And ultimately, if you're landing in Jeddah, about half an hour before, that's when you make the intention. Okay? Many people have the misunderstanding that once you put the sheets on, that's it, you're in the state of ihram. No, not until you actually make the intention and start saying talbiyah. Labbaik Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka labbaik, innal hamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk, la sharika lak. This is the talbiyah. And once you start saying it, this is the intention for the ihram. Okay? Prior to that, you put the sheets on, you are simply putting sheets on, and you are not in the state of ihram yet until you make the intention. And the my advice is for people to delay it as much as possible so that you don't have those restrictions for a longer time. Okay? And for example, let's give you one small example of how the ihram may be corrupted. A person, he lands in Dubai. Okay? He goes to the showers, puts the ihram on, and starts doing talbiyah straight away. Alright? He starts doing talbiyah, that means now his ihram has started. And now he's waiting to get onto the plane. He has 2 hours to make sure that he doesn't contaminate, he doesn't mess up the ihram. Alright, he gets onto the plane, and the first thing that the airline staff do, they'll give you a hot towel which has perfume inside it. Immediately, the first thing that a person does is he wipes his hands and his face, and immediately he has gone against the restriction of ihram. So to avoid all of these things, to avoid these problems, a person needs to make sure that he tries to delay the ihram as much as possible. About 20 minutes or so before the plane actually lands is when the intention should be done. And in Saudi Airlines, they have the screens on the seats, and they make a countdown. They make a countdown of when a person needs to be in the state of ihram. Okay, so you have 1 minute left, you have 20 seconds left, and then 10, 9, and before that you have to basically make the intention because they are crossing over the miqat. Okay, carry on. Okay, these slides are telling you the different places of miqat. Okay, and okay, while we're here on this slide, Dhul Hulaifa, number one. Okay, so now I talked about if you are in going to Mecca first, right? If you're going to Jeddah first. If you're going to Medina first, you don't have to be in the state of Ihram when you land in Medina, obviously. Okay? And this is why one of the reasons that I prefer to go to Medina, a person is more relaxed, there is less crowd at the airport, it's very, very smooth coming out of the airport. On average, it takes you from the time the plane lands and until you're out on the street about 15 minutes to 45 minutes. Not more than that in Medina. In Jeddah, there are horror stories. 10 hours, 12 hours, you know, this is pretty much the norm. If you are lucky, then you would be out in about 2 to 3 hours. Everything is quite efficient in Medina, and obviously when you're not in the state of Ihram, you feel more relaxed, and you can go to the hotel and relax and have a nice shower using the shower gel and so on, so you become more refreshed, and you have 3 or 4 days to kind of get out of the tiredness of your travel before proceeding for Umrah. Okay, so on the other hand, if you land in Jeddah, immediately you have to go perform the Umrah, you have the tiredness of the trip, no sleep for maybe 2 days, and now you're performing the Umrah, and that tiredness basically, it sticks with you until the rest of the Hajj also, because you didn't get a chance to relax properly. So in any case, once you get to Medina, you will relax, go to the hotel, and try to pray all of your salats in the Masjid, Masjid al-Nabawi, and when you depart from Medina, you will have your sheets on when you leave the hotel and when you're getting onto the bus. Okay? And the bus will stop at a place called Dhul Hulaifa. Dhul Hulaifa is also known as Abyar Ali. These are the two names that are commonly used for the miqat of Medina. It's about 15 minutes out of the city of Medina. So you get onto the bus, 15-20 minutes, the bus will stop and you will get into Ihram or make the intention of Ihram, pray two rak'ah and so on. You have the opportunity to do that. There's a musalla and a place for making wudu, even showers over there if you want to do that. Okay, now one point you have to make sure you understand that, and this is ironic, that the Hajj authorities don't take more care of this, is that if a person, he gets into the state of Ihram and he now wants to use the bathroom before getting back onto the bus again. Okay, as you might do because you have a long journey ahead of you, 4 to 6 hours. But the soap that they have in Dhul Hulaifa, it is perfume soap. It's an amazing thing, but there you have it. Carelessness on the part of the authorities, but you shouldn't be neglectful. You should make sure that you do not use that soap. Keep with you unperfumed soap that you will carry in a little pouch or something. What kind of soap are you going to take with you? If you go to Walgreens or any pharmacy or Walmart even, find the shower wash or body wash which is hypoallergenic, which is unperfumed. Hypoallergenic is for those people that have skin allergies, and because they are not allowed to use perfume because of those skin allergies, body wash will not have any perfume in it. However, some people get confused. They open the bottle, they smell it, and they say, well, it has a smell. Well, everything has a smell, okay? Every chemical has a smell. But the bottle will say it's unperfumed. It does not have fragrance, or it will say fragrance-free. So that is the thing that you need to use. Also, Walgreens will have these little bottles that you can basically, if you're going with your wife, you fill one bottle for yourself, give one bottle to your wife, and you will use this soap on the rest of your journey. And then again, the same thing applies. that when you get from Medina to Mecca and you go into the hotel, or you're going to Aziziya, sometimes they are, especially in the hotels, they're very careless about the shower gel and the soaps that are in the hotels. They will have perfume soap there for you. So to avoid that, immediately put those soaps to the side, and this little bottle that you brought with you, put it in front, or even a big bottle, so that the people that are in your room, they can share that same bottle and not contaminate their haram. Okay? So in Dhul Hulaifa or Abyar Ali is where the people that are coming from Medina, they will get into the state of ihram from there. Okay. Also, just as a side note, Dhul Hulaifa is a very confusing place. It's a very symmetrical area, and a person, if he doesn't pay attention to, you know, how he's coming in, which gate he came in from, and where his bus is parked, he will get really confused and he will get lost. So pay particular attention to where your bus is parked. Get the number of your bus. There are numbers on the buses, and you need to know what the number is, okay? Because there are going to be hundreds of buses coming in and out, and you're going to be confused like crazy if you don't know which bus it was. So get the color of the bus, the brand of the bus, look at the face of the driver, you know, to see what he looks like, and make sure you take all of these mental notes before getting off the bus and going in to perform your two rak'ah or making wudu and so on. Make sure that you do not lose yourself in Abyar Ali or Dhul Hulaifa. Go ahead. And all of the rest of the others are different miqats that are for different people that are coming from different directions. Go ahead. So again, this is a map of the different mawaqit or miqats. Go ahead, carry on. Okay, so before getting into ihram clothes, take a bath or shower. And obviously when you're going to be on the plane, if you're going to be doing that, you have no opportunity to do that. Maybe you might not even have an opportunity to make wudu. Okay, so that's fine. It's not a big deal. And you're not going to be able to even perform two rak'ah, because obviously when the plane is about to land, everybody rushes to make two rak'ah. It's impossible. Okay, so you don't need to do that. Okay, it's recommended to do two rak'ah, but on the plane, when you're about to land, you will not do that. You will just make the intention and say talbiyah. Okay, so what is the ruling for the men's ihram? Two pieces of white cloth. It can be actually any color, but the recommended color is white. It has to be unstitched. And when we say unstitched, many people think that even the borders should not have any stitching on them. When we say unstitched, it means that the stitching should not be such that you can put your feet and arms through. Okay? Basically, it doesn't make sleeves. The stitching doesn't make sleeves. So that's why the ihram cloth, if it has like a border on it, it's stitched, that's fine. There's no problem with it. If you are putting a belt underneath the ihram and that has stitching on it, that's fine. If your shoes, they have stitching on them, that's fine. There's no problem with it. All right. The stitching that is prohibited is that type of stitching in through which a person puts his feet through and it makes legs, or he puts his hands through and he makes arms. And that is underwear is included in that. Okay. So underwear that has stitching on it, so then obviously you are putting it on, so that is prohibited. Okay, so for men there is no underwear. And obviously in the picture it shows the right shoulder exposed for the person. But this is not how you wear the ihram. You would wear throughout the trip, there's only one point in which you would keep your right shoulder uncovered, and we'll cover that in a few minutes. But all the time you would actually cover yourself completely. Shoulders and everything is covered. You would cover yourself completely, just like people wear chadar back home. You know, this is how the men should cover their top part. And the lower part, the navel should be covered, the belly button, and you should tie it in such a way that it's impossible for a person to get exposed. All right, so, and that happens a lot. People are a little bit careless about how they sit, and you know, these exposure takes place. So it's very important that you make sure that you cover yourself in such a way that that exposure is not taking place. For the sisters, the ordinary dress is the ihram for the sisters. Their ordinary clothing. And by ordinary, we mean the modest clothing, which is not too brightly colored, abaya, hijab, as the Islamic clothing is. Whatever the Islamic ruling is about clothing, everything is covered except the hands and the face. And also, the ruling for ihram is that the women, the cloth should not be touching their face also. So if a woman has the habit of making niqab, for example, in the case of ihram, she should either remove the niqab, but she can cover her face if men are passing by without the cloth touching her face. All right, so she would cover her face if she is particular about that, but she would not allow the cloth to touch the face on purpose. All right, also for men, when they're in the state of ihram, they will not allow the cloth to touch their face or their head. They should not be covering their head with the ihram. The issue, what some women do is, if they are habitually making niqab, is what they will do is they will put like a baseball cap on underneath their hijab, and they will hang a cloth over their face, and it's kind of like hanging down but not actually touching their face. So you will see some women doing that. But the ruling is that a woman, that she should not be, the cloth should not be actually touching her face. Go ahead. At the time of ihram, you can actually put perfume on your body before making the intention, not after making the intention. So you took a shower, put the itr on your body, rub it onto your body, and then put the cloth on, and that's okay at that point. And the lingering effect of that, if it remains on your body, that's fine. But after the intention, you are not allowed to put any perfume on. Okay, this is what I mentioned earlier, that many people think that the two pieces of cloth is ihram, but the reality is that it's not just putting the two pieces of cloth on, it is actually putting the two pieces of cloth on and then making the intention. Right? Go ahead. Carry on. Okay, so if you get the opportunity to perform two rak'ah at the state before coming into the state of ihram, then it's recommended for you to read Qul Ya Ayyuhal Kafirun and Qul Huwallahu Ahad in both rak'ahs. Okay? Carry on. And then you'll make the intention. Now, we said earlier that what we are making the intention for is Hajj Tamattu. So you're making the intention for Umrah immediately. Right now you're making the intention for Umrah, and then breaking the ihram, going out of the ihram, and then making Hajj later on. So the dua is Allahumma inni uridul umrata fayassirha li wa taqabbalha minni. You don't have to have the exact wording. Alright? Basically, you just say in your heart, "Oh Allah, I'm making the intention for Umrah, make it easy for me, accept it from me," and that's enough for you to say that. Okay, go ahead. Now, you would start reading the talbiyah, which is Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik, Labbaik La Sharika Laka Labbaik, Innal Hamda Wa Ni'mata Laka Wal Mulk La Sharika Lak. This is the talbiyah, and you carry on reading it as much as possible. Men read the talbiyah loudly, and women read it slowly. The concept that many people have is that people, for example, there's one person reading loudly, Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik, and then people reading after him. This is not from the Sunnah. Okay, so individually, each person recites the talbiyah by themselves. That is how you're supposed to do it. Unless, you know, the people don't know it, how to say it, and now a muallim, a teacher, an alim, or the group leader, with the intention of teaching them, then he can do that. But otherwise, it's not the sunnah for to recite it behind each other. All right. All this slide tells you the meaning of talbiyah, what is the wisdom behind the talbiyah, and what it means, and so on. So you can read that, inshallah, what the scholars say about it. Okay, next slide. Now, from this point on, you're in the state of ihram. Go ahead. So all of these things are prohibited in the state of ihram. What are they? Hunting, right? Sexual intercourse, or even discussing that. Okay, your wife is with you and somehow you just become romantic in Hajj. All right, so you know you need to control yourself during the state of ihram. No romantic talk, okay, even with your own wife, it's not permissible. Okay, in the state of ihram, you're not supposed to do that. Perfumes, fragrances, scents, everything, whether they are you're using the perfume soap, and so on, everything is prohibited from that perspective. Use unperfumed soap only. Sewn clothes, I mentioned that already. Makeup, ornament, or surma. Surma basically kohl that is put in the eyes for the ladies. Henna, lying, abusing, swearing, unlawful acts. Shaving or clipping the hair from any part of the body. Clipping of the nails. You're not allowed to do all of these things, okay? Cutting the hair, cutting the beard, trimming the mustache. All of these things are prohibited. Men must not cover the central bone of the upper part of the foot. This is particularly in Hanafi fiqh, okay? That the upper part of the foot, which is called the metatarsal in scientific terms, that should not be covered, okay? So flip-flops or those kinds of sandals that leave the upper bone exposed, that is what men should be wearing. Other fuqaha, they say that only the ankle at the back should be uncovered. Other than that, if the front of the foot is covered, there's no problem according to the other fuqaha. Men must not cover their face or head. Women should not cover their faces, but in the presence of men, they may cover in a way that the covering does not touch their face. Do not cause harm to any Muslim, be it verbally or physically. And this is really the test of a person's patience, that he will be, sometimes he have to deal with a lot of things. Sometimes the agents, they do not fulfill their promises, what they said that they would do, and people become frustrated. Okay, sometimes it's not even their fault. Okay, say for example, your living quarters are in Aziziyah. Okay, for most people, during the days of Hajj, people will be in Aziziyah. And now to get transportation from Aziziyah to the Haram, it is almost impossible because of the traffic and so on. Or they are waiting for the bus gets stuck in traffic. People are waiting, and no bus is coming. People start getting frustrated. Okay, it's not the fault of the agent, it's just the traffic is so bad. So when people become frustrated, they start taking it out on either on each other or they take it out on the agent. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, فَلَا رَفَثَ وَلَا فُسُوقَ وَلَا جِدَالَ فِي الْحَجِّ. There is no rafath. Rafath is what I mentioned earlier, intimate talk with one's wife. Fusuq, any type of sin. Jidal, argument and fighting. All of these things are not permissible in Hajj. They will invalidate or they will diminish the reward for the Hajj. So that needs to be made sure that you're not doing it. Okay, carry on. Okay, the things that are permissible in ihram: shadowing under an umbrella or anything that does not touch your head. Anything that does not touch your head, like the roof of a car, an awning, a tent, all of these things, they are covering you but not actually touching your head. So that's permissible. You can wear a ring, glasses, hearing aid, watch, belt or girdle which protects your money and documents. Not a wig. Okay, I've seen this. I've actually seen this. A person, he had a wig, and you can tell that it's a wig, and he's in the state of ihram, and he's walking around as if it's his actual head. It's the actual hair. But in the state of ihram, you're not supposed to cover your head. And this is something artificial that is covering the head, invalidating or actually going against the rules of Hajj. So A person, if he has a wig, he needs to get rid of that pride and remove that and let the head show. Okay. If while you are in ihram, you want to wash your ihram clothes or change them, you can do so. You can also have a bath or shower, but you must not scrub yourself down. Just let the water run over your body. And if you need to use soap, use the unperfumed soap. Otherwise, you don't use any soap at all. When you are in the camp in Mina, you will find that the toilets are there. And right next to the toilets, there is a shower on top of you. All right. So that's basically the facilities that are there for shower. The water is always warm, so if you want to take a shower, it's very comfortable for a person to do that. Okay, it's very, it's easy for a person to do that. You don't really need to even dry yourself because it's quite warm in the tents. So you just take a quick shower and put your ihram cloths again and come out of the shower. So it's okay. You can cover yourself, including your feet, with a blanket, quilt, sleeping bag, or any other cover, but you must not cover your head or face. You may also use miswak to clean your teeth. Okay, go ahead. Now we're going to go into the guide for actually performing the umrah. Go ahead. These are the fada'il of umrah. We're not going to go into that. Go ahead. Also this, virtues of Umrah. Go ahead. Carry on. All right, so there are four steps of Umrah. The first, we've already covered, is entering into the state of Ihram. Okay? The next one is to perform the Tawaf. And we're going to go into detail how to perform that. But this is the next step. When you enter the masjid in Mecca, the first thing you do is you start with tawaf. No tahiyatul masjid. Because the tahiyatul masjid of the Kaaba is the tawaf itself. Tahiyya meaning the respect of the masjid. Okay? So the respect of the masjid, the respect of the Kaaba is performing tawaf. So immediately you come and you start performing the tawaf. Alright? Where it starts from and so on, we'll talk about it in a minute. Where is this? Okay. The next thing is performing sa'i, which is between the Safa and Marwa. Halaq or qasr, cutting of the head. So these are the four steps of the umrah. After the tawaf, you should also perform two rak'ah, which inshallah we'll mention in a minute. Go ahead. Okay, we've already covered the issues of ihram and when to get into the ihram. Go ahead. Go ahead. These are the things that you should keep with you. Nowadays, actually, they're going to give you an electronic bracelet this year. This is new. There's an electronic bracelet that has like all your information stored in it. All right. So I don't know how it's going to work, whether it's going to be efficient or not. But new things are coming all the time. And this is something new that I've heard is going to happen this year. Go ahead. This is, as you enter the masjid, you read the dua of the masjid. Bismillah, as-salatu was-salamu ala rasulillah. Allahumma aftahli abwaab rahmatik. Go ahead. If you can, you should go through Babu Salam. Okay, this is not necessary. But if you can, it's the sunnah to do that. But again, to find Babu Salam may be a big challenge for many people, so you can enter through any door, inshallah. Go ahead. Carry on. Say, the first time you say, see the Kaaba, Allahu Akbar, La ilaha illallah. Go ahead. You carry on making talbiyah all the time. Alright, now, how do you perform the tawaf itself? Now this is very important, pay attention. You start at Al-Hajr al-Aswad, the black stone. You, as soon as you see Al-Hajr al-Aswad, and sometimes with the crowd you might not be able to see it, but right opposite to Al-Hajr al-Aswad, the black stone, you will see a fluorescent tube light. like a green tube light that indicates that this is right in front of Al-Hajr al-Aswad. And if you're on the top floors, okay, the first floor, the second floor, even the third floor, there will be a sign there. Tawaf starts here. Min huna bada al-tawaf, or yabda al-tawaf in Arabic, okay? So you will start the tawaf from there, and you will start with istilam. Istilam means you say Allahu Akbar, and you point with your hand towards Al-Hajr al-Aswad. And you don't have to kiss it or anything like that. You just say Allahu Akbar, point with your hand, and you start making the circumambulation around the Kaaba. For the men, it's sunnah for the first three rounds to walk like a brave, strong, powerful man, which is called ramal. It's kind of like almost jogging with your shoulders back, chest out. And there's a reason and wisdom behind it. I won't go into that because we're short on time. So you go around the Kaaba, and each time you pass Al-Hajr al-Aswad, you would make istilam each time you pass by. The corner before Al-Hajr al-Aswad is called Ruknul Yamani, or the Yemeni corner. And it's sunnah to actually try to touch it. Touch, not kiss, Ruknul Yamani, if you can physically do it. If you cannot physically do it, then you ignore it. Physically touching Ruknul Yamani, it's sunnah. If you cannot physically touch it, then making istilam of Ruknul Yamani is not sunnah. You ignore it and you carry on, and you come to Al-Hajr al-Aswad, and you, as you're passing by, you don't have to stop and be exactly right in front of Al-Hajr al-Aswad. You basically, as soon as you see Al-Hajr al-Aswad, you pick your hand up, say Allahu Akbar, and you just keep on carrying on. A few years ago, they used to have a line, a black line, from Al-Hajr al-Aswad, kind of stretching all the way back. And they got rid of that black line. And the reason was, people used to think that I have to stand right on this black line and stand right in front of Al-Hajr al-Aswad, because this line is coming from there, and it used to basically create chaos. So they removed the black line, and now basically the reason is that you should basically, as soon as you see Al-Hajr al-Aswad, you carry on, say Allahu Akbar, and you carry around. Like this, you make seven rounds. You make seven rounds, and the eighth time, once you've completed seven rounds, you make one final istilam, Allahu Akbar, and you then perform two rak'ah. So seven rounds, eight times you made istilam, and then you perform two rak'ah. Maqam Ibrahim is that gold-shaped building right there, where the footsteps of Ibrahim alayhi salatu wasalam are. If you can, you should try to face in the direction of Maqam Ibrahim and the Kaaba at the same time. If you cannot, it's fine. There's no problem. Perform two rak'ah anywhere. Alright, it's sunnah to perform it next to Maqam Ibrahim or close to Maqam Ibrahim, but the crowd will be too much. So do not perform the two rak'ah right next to it. Go back 100 yards or so and try to face the direction of Maqam Ibrahim and the Kaaba at the same time. This is how you perform the two rak'ah. After performing two rak'ah, if you can get the zamzam, drink as much zamzam as you can, and then you go backwards towards Safa and Marwa. Okay, so again, it's going to be behind Maqam Ibrahim. If you go backwards, you will see a sign. It will say the beginning of Sa'i, or Al-Mas'a. Al-Mas'a means the place where you're going to make Sa'i. Now, if your back is to the Kaaba, you go to the right-hand side, and on the right-hand side will be Safa. As you get to Safa, you again, before starting the sa'i between the Safa and Marwa, you will turn to the Kaaba and make a dua. This is the time of the acceptance of dua. Okay? You make dua, a lengthy dua as much as possible, and you make as much dua as possible, and then you start making the sa'i between the Safa and Marwa. Okay? You go from Safa all the way to Marwa. This is one round. And then from Marwa to Safa, this is two. And all the way back, so basically seven rounds, you will start at Safa, and the seventh round, you will end at Marwa. There is one opinion of Imam Shafi'i that going back from Safa all the way to Saqqa is one round, but if you can imagine, you know, most even Shafi'is don't follow that opinion. It's because it's quite a lengthy kind of stroll. Between, while you're making Sa'i between the Safa and Marwa, there are luminous lights, green lights that are on top. When you see those green lights, it's sunnah for the men to kind of jog a little bit and to pick up their pace. For the women, they keep up their normal pace, they don't jog along with the men. And if your wives are with you and they're making Sa'i with you, just don't rush off and leave them behind. Basically, kind of just make a small jogging action to fulfill the sunnah. But if a person cannot do that, then it's, you know, it doesn't break the sa'i or anything like that. It is sufficient for a person just to go from Safa and Marwa. Okay, go ahead, carry on. And the other thing is, don't try to kiss the black stone. It's just very, very impossible. A lot of people just get into that. Making istilam is sufficient and has exactly the same reward as kissing the black stone. Remember that. Without the hassle. So why get into the hassle? Why get into the fights? Why get into the pushing and shoving? And getting bruised and getting your clothes ripped? That happens. Go ahead. Alright, these are the different types of tawaf. What you're going to be performing is the Umrah Tawaf. Go ahead. This is all the things that you do before the Tawaf. And it's not essential to make this Dua, but if you want to do it, it's fine. Go ahead. Okay, I forgot to mention this. For the men, while they're making Tawaf, to make what's known as Ittiba' is Sunnah. Ittiba' means that you keep your right shoulder uncovered. This is the only point where the right shoulder of the man remains uncovered while he's making the tawaf around the Kaaba. Okay? So other than that, the ihram will be covering the whole body, and only at the point of making tawaf, it's sunnah to make iltiba', which means to keep the right shoulder uncovered. Go ahead. Okay, so carry on clicking. I've mentioned everything, so you go ahead. Ramal, I've mentioned that already. Ruknul Yamani is the corner before Al-Hajr al-Aswad. If you can touch it physically, you should try to touch it. Go ahead. I think they should put an arrow next to it. Now this is an illustration, same thing. Go ahead. Okay, so what happens if, for example, Salat starts while you're making Tawaf? So you just stop wherever you are, perform the Salat, and as soon as Salat finishes, you carry on making Tawaf. Okay, go ahead. Prohibitions in Tawaf, these are all the prohibitions. Okay, you do not have to touch the black stone, do not kiss the Yemeni corner. It says, do not touch the walls of the Kaaba during Tawaf. Do not hurt anyone in trying to kiss the black stone. Do not raise your hands to the Yemeni corner and say, Allahu Akbar, this is only for the black stone. Do not push or hurt anyone during Tawaf. Do not do Tawaf with your back to the Kaaba. The Kaaba should be to your left. Do not linger at the point where you are in line with the black stone. Move on, okay? Because you are basically stopping all the crowd. Go ahead. This is Maqam Ibrahim, where I mentioned that you're supposed to pray the 2 rak'ah. Go ahead. These are the actual footsteps of Ibrahim alayhi salatu wasalam that are in Maqam Ibrahim. That's why it's called Maqam Ibrahim. Go ahead. And then after performing the 2 rak'ah, you would drink as much zamzam as you can. Go ahead, carry on. And then sa'i between Safa and Marwa. See these lines in the middle? These are for the wheelchairs, all right? on the side, you see, on one side, you see people are going towards one side. This is from Safa to Marwa. And on the other side, you will see that it is from Marwa to Safa. Okay? And you will see also, nowadays, the green lights are on the ceilings. The green lights are not on the side. The green lights are on the ceilings, indicating where men should start running. Go ahead. Okay, quickly, because the time is running out. After doing Sa'i between Safa and Marwa, all you have to do, the only thing remaining, is for you to cut your hair. Alright? So you have two options. You can make halaq or qasr. Qasr means to trim the hair. And for the men, my suggestion is, you cut it as short as possible. Maybe using a machine, the barber will do it for you. They take like 10 riyals, which is like $3-4. They will cut your hair for you. Use the machine, so it leaves a little bit of hair for you, so that you can cut it on the day of Hajj, on the 10th of Dhul Hijjah. But qasr is also permissible, which means just to trim the hair, all right, with the scissors. Okay, the more you cut it, the more rewarding it is. Halaq, it is more rewarding than qasr. Or basically, shaving the head is more rewarding than qasr. So, you know, it's a time to make sacrifices, and if you cannot even sacrifice your hair at the time that you're performing the Hajj, you know, it leaves question marks about how much you want to sacrifice for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, so once you've cut your hair, then you are now out of the state of ihram. Go back to the hotel and get out of your clothes, get back into your normal clothes. Umrah is finished. And now, for the next 2 or 3 days, however many days you have until Hajj, you will relax, and the restrictions of ihram have now been removed from you. You can use perfume. If your wife is with you, intimacy is fine. And also, wearing regular clothes, taking a shower with perfume soap, all of these things now become permissible. Until the 8th of Dhul Hijjah, when you go into ihram again, and inshallah we're going to cover that tomorrow after Salatul Maghrib. Jazakumullah khairan.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Ashhadu an la أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح أكبر لا إله إلا الله. الله أكبر الله أكبر. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله. أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله. حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح. قد قامت الصلاة قد قامت الصلاة. الله أكبر الله أكبر. لا إله إلا الله.
جزاك الله خير. استمع واعتذر واستقيم.